welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 660 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm doing very well.
What is it about the episodes with zero at the end? They kind of have more relevance, don't they?
It's like age, isn't it? The ones with zeros on the end, the difference between being 20 and being 30 and being 40.
Well, 60 is a big number for you, and you've crossed that line years ago.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm 53.
Oh, I thought you were 21, you keep saying. Gee, are you doing? You all right?
I'm good. I'm very good.
We're just back from our networking bash, aren't we? So we're full of energy, full of beans.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. We had them doing an exercise, didn't we, with the air sticks. We had to
put a stick
on them. Which is really funny. That's good. I love it.
I don't know if you can get it on YouTube. I'll find a link.
Helium sticks.
Helium sticks, I'll put it in the show notes so you can have a look and have a go. It's a cool little workplace exercise, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good.
Which is harder than you may think. Speaking of show notes, if you're new to the show and you go to liveinthepresent.co.uk, you will find the links to all the things we're about to discuss, as well as all previous episodes. And if you put your email address in the little boxes on the website, which are just impossible to miss, but for obvious reasons, or for reasons for us, so we can get your email address and sell stuff to you down the line, we'll send you some free stuff as well. Meditation files, ebooks, that kind of thing. Seriously, they're pretty cool, aren't they?
They're
cool.
They're not pretty cool, they're very cool.
This week we are talking about rejection, something that Sean and I have a huge wealth of experience with.
Well, I don't know. I've never been rejected.
Oh, well, yeah, that's not what the blog post says.
Just once or twice, yeah.
There's a blog post to accompany this episode, which if you go again to the website, you will find and you can have a read of at your leisure. But before that, how have you been, Sean? How's the training going?
It's good. I said a little while ago I'd overtrain, so Conrad's had me on these kind of recuperation weeks.
Conrad of Rock Mountain Fitness, our physical guru.
Yeah, amazing guy.
Yeah.
But I'm on this thing where I do, I think they call them presses, but I'm lifting weights. So I do alternate arms with 100 weights, 100,
cool.
100 lifts every morning.
Weightlifting, man.
Which is good. 5K at the moment, lifting, going up to 10K. And Conrad says he lifts 15K. But does 150 repetitions.
That's serious, and Conrad's a tiny little fella.
Yeah, but he's amazingly strong.
Tiny,
odd, wiry.
Building your core and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm doing, so I'm going to have
I mean, you'll get loads of advice, but I think generally you can get a lot more out of even just 10 like squats with a serious weight above your head in the gym, rather as opposed
to
doing...
You need to come to the Hour of Power.
I know.
And give it a go. It is good.
No, I've done it. I've done it with Conrad. It's good fun. But yeah, I've been out on my bike this week because at the weekend I'm heading to the Highlands.
Yeah, brilliant.
I've got a little challenge of my own. I'm cycling, ladies and gentlemen, from Glencoe up to Fort William and then across country to pretty much Aberdeen. So it's 180 miles, which 180 miles by road isn't a huge undertaking, actually.
Over the mountains.
But we're going over mountains, cross country.
And everyone keeps saying that you're going to be eaten alive by the midges.
Yeah, these midges, man. That's my main.
What your sponsorship should have been is you could have sponsored like a pound a bite.
Per bite, I think. The World Sight of the Blind would benefit hugely from that. I'll put a link in the show notes. If you go to justgiving.com/edlamb, EDLAMB, there's more information there. And if you could sponsor me, that'd be awesome. It's for a great cause, great little charity that I work with closely. I think it's going to be hard going, man. It's going to be tricky.
Yeah.
I'll be tweeting pictures and all that stuff as well. Yeah. So follow me.
It's good on the network where we've just been because people are doing things and raising money.
So I know, we're all egging each other on to do cool stuff.
Adele Law this morning, she did the pink thing. What is it?
Race for Life, 5K.
So, and she's raised a load of money, which is brilliant. It's good.
Phil did his. He's been on a weight loss program, hasn't he? He's done well on that.
Is it a pound?
Pound for a pound, yeah. he did well. He's keeping it up. So
it's good.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know, sometimes I feel guilty asking because everyone keeps asking for Dosh for sponsorship, but everyone should be doing something once a year, I think, at least, some kind of challenge.
Well, one of the things for next cast, not this one, is we're going to look at giving and receiving, and that's very much a part of what we need to talk about, that idea about what do we give
Yeah.
and why do we give.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing this bike ride almost for selfish reasons, just because I want to see that part of the world and I want to push myself. But obviously, I'm trying to, on the back of that, raise a bit of dosh for a charity as well.
But it works both ways, doesn't it? You're getting a load out of it and you're giving a load out of it. So it's giving and receiving. It's good.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Check out the website for more information about that. But we'll dive into this week's show. We've got the door open here in my front room, and there's, for some reason, I don't know if it's just because of the temperature, cats are fighting a lot in our neighbourhood at the moment. So if you hear a squealing, it's not me and Sean.
It's probably mating time, isn't it?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. It's that kind of temperature, eh? So apologies for any cat squeals you hear going off. Let's dive in. Sean, rejection. How many times have you been rejected, or how often do you get rejected? It must be on a near daily basis for you.
I think that rejection, it's my beginning statement for this one, is rejection's in the eye of the beholder, in the sense that you can't be bullied without your permission when you can't be rejected without your permission anyway. I mean, there's going to be loads of times when people don't want to know us for whatever reason, or they don't want us, or they don't want to use our services or whatever. But the thing, that's not the issue. The issue is, how do we respond to it?
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm reminded of things like the guys that did the Angry Birds. It was their 51st
Rovio. Yeah,
51st app. Yeah, so which means that they had 50 failures. You could look at it like that, or maybe they had 50 learning points.
Yeah,
they had 50. It's like, how did they deal with that? But when they got to the 51st, bang, they made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's true. When we were talking about it earlier on, what came back to me was being a kid at the kind of youth club kind of thing, and there's a dance on.
Yep.
And it was always the boy that had to ask the girl to dance. I hope it's different these days. But the idea that you've got to walk across the dance floor in view of everybody, and you've got to say to the girl, are you dancing? And then if she says no, sod off, then you've got to walk all the way back again with everybody knowing.
Tail between your legs.
And that's kind of difficult rejection when you're young.
Yeah.
Like that, I think.
Yeah, we're social creatures, aren't we? We belong in groups, in gangs, and when we get turfed out of the gang, it can be
But all animals work in groups, whether it's a group of ants, whether it's a herd of elephants, you know, whether it's a troop of apes, a flock of birds, shoulder fish. It's like everybody's working together. And the problem for all of us...
Are cats? What about domestic cats? Because they go around in this area on their own and just...
There are odd animals like tigers, like cats, like pandas, who tend to live solitary lives and they only come together to mate.
Mm-hmm.
Spiders are a bit like that.
There's a big spider in Bethan, just as a bit of a side point. Bethan was putting a dressing gown on the other morning and a huge spider crawled across her shoulder. I was asleep. She flung it on the floor and then stupidly went downstairs to get breakfast, and then she thought, I'll get rid of it when I come back up. Came back up and it's gone. It's somewhere in the blooming bedroom, man. It's huge. She said it's like the size of a small car.
And of bananas.
I'm terrified. I can't sleep, but... That's by the by. We rejected that spider.
You need to see a therapist.
Yeah. Just keep your eyes peeled, that's all I'm saying. Where were we?
We're talking about groups of animals.
Yes, the spiders, they're loners, okay.
Yeah, there are animals that are loners, but the majority of creatures survive because they work together. It's a bit like a herd of wildebeest. The ones on the outside are the ones that are sick and poorly. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that tend to get picked off by the lions.
Yep.
But the lions only hunt successfully because they hunt as a group.
Sure.
Yeah, and one of the worst things that can happen for any member of a group is to be excluded.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that's the ultimate rejection, isn't it? So that in human beings, we talk about sending people to Coventry in Britain. Yeah, and that means we don't talk to them if they're sent to Coventry. And that comes from the fact that in the last World War, Coventry was bombed out of existence. And it was like a rude thing to say to someone, you know, we're going to send you to Coventry, because that meant you were going to die, really.
Blimey. Poor old Coventry.
Yeah, you really got a pasting in the wall.
Yeah.
But that idea that if you're sent to Coventry, you've been rejected. And there's nothing worse than walking into a room, and it goes quiet, and you know that everyone's been talking about you before you walked in the room, and suddenly it's all gone silent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know that there's something going on, where you've become, and this is the point about rejection, I think you become one of them rather than one of us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
I mean, that idea of being groups, I mean, and some people just aren't confident on their own, and I read an article about this recently. I will try and find it and put it in the notes, about how we do need to, you need to make peace with yourself and be comfortable on your own, and a lot of people these days aren't. They reach for the phone the second they're they're on their own. I'm guilty of this. Is that through a fear of rejection, do you think?
Well, it's the fear of aloneness. The fear of not being a part of the group. I mean, lots of people, when they wake up, will turn on radio, television, that kind of thing.
Yep.
To fill the space up so they're not alone.
Yep.
So that the person on the radio, the disc jockey, you know, the announcer, becomes their friend.
Sure.
You get that kind of distant stuff. I mean, people say when they listen to this podcast that they feel like they're involved in the conversation. And I know people that actually talk back to the speaker when we're talking.
Yeah, no, I've heard that.
Yeah,
and don't turn this off, by the way. Don't use this as an excuse to just be on your own for a bit. Wait till we're finished.
Yeah.
Don't reject us.
Especially if you're swimming with us or something like that. But that whole idea of we need to be connected, the natural human state really is to be connected with others.
Yeah.
And even the person who sees themselves as a hermit, maybe, that lives on their own, isn't on their own. They're actually connected to the whole of the universe, you know, or spirit or whatever. They don't feel like they're on their own.
Sure.
But when we feel isolated and we feel rejected, that can create a lot of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do see quite a few people who have that sense of aloneness, as though they've been rejected by society, you know, there's nothing to connect to.
Yeah.
And they may go to work and have successful work lives, but they come home and the house is empty. What do you do?
Mm.
And I was in a situation like that quite a long time ago when I got divorced, and I was living in a house on my own, and I'd come home and there was that sense of nothingness in the house. So I went to the RSPCA to buy a cat, and I had to buy two because they came as a pair. They were Bib and Bob, two big ginger cats. So there was something that when I went through the door, went at me, that there was some kind of interaction with another living thing.
Yeah.
And I needed that, especially because at the time I'd moved to a different part of the country, and it would mean when I finished work on a Friday, I wouldn't actually talk to another human being until Monday, unless I did something to make contact with somebody.
Yep.
And it's like that, isn't it? When you move somewhere, then you have to rebuild networks and things so that you belong again.
Yeah, I'll bet.
You know.
I'll bet. You do a lot of couples work. When sometimes they have to go their separate ways, there's obviously the person doing the rejecting and the person that's been rejected.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when you're doing the rejecting, it's best to do it as sensitively as possible, unless it's been a horrific ending to the relationship.
One of the problems with the way that we live is we live in an adversarial kind of situation.
What are you talking about?
What do you mean?
What do you mean? Yeah. Rubbish.
Everything's about conflict, it's about fault and blame. You know, there isn't a situation where someone says, you know, sorry, I don't want to do this anymore, and we can amicably create a split. There has to be some issue. I do not want to do this because...
We must launch an investigation into why this happened.
And then we have lots of recrimination, and that's when it gets really bad.
Inquiry.
Yeah.
Independent adjudicators and all that lark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that when you're in that situation where someone is effectively saying to you, I want to go and be with another person. The person that has been rejected very often goes through a confidence crisis, and that confidence crisis is about their own value.
Yep.
It's about their own value as a human being, sexually, spiritually, you know, even financially. All those kinds of things become an embarrassing confidence point. Unless someone feels good about who they are. Because if I feel good about me, and this is what I mean about it's very much in the eye of the beholder, if I feel good about me and you reject me, I think, you idiot. What a twit. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you missing out on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if I'm feeling really bad and you reject me, then it just makes me feel worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, and very often in relationships you get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's another side of the coin that we're talking about here, because we're talking about the person that is rejected. What happens if you need to do the rejecting? You know, what happens if someone goes down on one knee before you and presents you with a big diamond ring and says, will you marry me? And you're thinking, I don't want to do this. How do you say no?
Yeah,
you
know, sensitively.
And maybe it's happened in public, or you get someone who does it on the media, don't you? You know, a very public display. And you need to say no. And how do you do that? I was describing an experience earlier on. When I was playing a lot of music, I was playing in a bar in Devon. Doing like a one-man show thing. And when I took a break, I went to go to the loo. And as I'm walking out towards the loo, there's a girl coming out of the girls' loos.
Mm-hmm.
And as she came up to me, she said, if I asked you to go to bed with me, what would you say? And I said, she was quite a lovely looking lady. I said, I'd say, thank you very much. It's a beautiful offer, but sadly I'm with another person and that would be a bit unfair, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, glad I didn't ask you then. And I thought, isn't that cool? Isn't that cool? Really good.
Nice.
Because there was
no, try that one.
No loss of, no loss of face, nothing, you know. Yeah. And she, and afterwards, when you know, later on at the end of the evening, she kind of smiled and off she went, you know. But it was okay. It was
that's
good.
Cool, man. Yeah, that's a little confidence boost for you because it's like, okay, but you obviously didn't follow it through, but for a good reason. It's me growing up as a young man when I'm 17, 18, 19. I was, to be honest, I was awful with girls. I don't know whether it's just because I had this.
When you said I was awful with girls,
well, asking girls out and that kind of thing, I was really shy. Partly maybe because I went to an all boys school and we used to hang around in a gang. And actually, most of my little group of pals, which I'm still really close to, we were pretty rubbish at that kind of thing. We'd just cluster in a group in the corner of the club or the whatever. And just it'll be really shy. But yeah, I think my confidence was shot at an early age in that sense, and I never kind of, I mean, I'm married now, so cool, it all worked out perfectly. But I often wonder, the things I might have missed out on in the relationships because I was too shy to do anything. So it can hit your confidence big time, rejection, can't it?
Yeah. Yeah, without going into loads and loads of detail, I found my first wife in bed with someone who was supposed to be like a good friend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, in the arms of another kind of thing.
Blimey.
And that was quite a shock at the time. It was a shock because it happened, but the second shock was I didn't see it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. The third shock was that it made me question the parentage of my youngest child. And for many years, or youngest child at that time.
Blimey.
Yeah, and I for many years believed that one of my kids wasn't one of my kids.
Did you ever go on Jeremy Kyle and get the DNA test?
As he's grown up, he looks more and more like
Jeremy
genetically.
Kyle.
Poor boy.
Yeah.
But for many
like
years...
Like you, you're saying, sorry.
Well, he looks like a member of the family.
Okay.
He looks like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was all quite difficult because, I mean, there was rejection on lots of levels.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, which has never really resolved itself because it had lots of ramifications around all the things that happened around that.
Without going into too much detail, did you react like with huge anger or were you kind of calm about it? And just
I had a baby in my arms at the time. It was all rebuilt, so I actually, which probably just as well, which meant that I couldn't.
Right.
React. But ultimately, she went off with this guy. So that was the ultimate rejection, and my response then, because I was quite a bit younger than I am now, was to go on a kind of a shagathon. I needed to rebuild my confidence, and I felt totally rejected and useless.
Yeah,
yeah. And I needed to kind of get some kind of self esteem back. I learned fairly quickly that you actually don't get a lot of self esteem from doing that kind of thing. But it was an instant response.
Growing up, perhaps not in my immediate group of pals, but yeah, when I'm going out and you'll see the same people on nights out and that, and there'll always be the guy that goes home with a different lady every week. And when you're young, or when I was younger, I used to think, oh, wow, you know, I wish that was me. But then...
No, it becomes meaningless.
Growing up, you just realise, you know, it's pretty pathetic, really. Not pathetic, but...
But meaningful relationships are about depth.
Yep.
They're about connection, connectivity. And that is something that happens outside of the bedroom, doesn't it? It's something which is much more to do with how we are together, how we work together.
Yeah, and you know, this is the passage of time and all the wisdom I have with my 32 years of age. I see people still going out, desperately looking for that Mr. Right or Mrs. Right on a night out when they're drinking loads and it's just not happening. It's pretty obvious, that's not a good place to find someone, and it's just... It is a place of almost constant rejection, actually. If you're seeing hundreds of people on a night out and you're trying to make eye contact for that right person, you're being rejected by everyone in even a tiny little way.
Yeah.
Yeah, nights out and booze aren't a good way to find.
Lots of people will say to me that the kind of person that I want to meet isn't going to be in the kind of place where I can go to meet them.
Yep.
So we're set up for rejection or rejecting.
Yep.
From the beginning. So that people opt for things like internet contact and stuff like that. But that can increase the rejection rate.
Yep.
Because when we present ourselves almost like a media figure through social media, we pick the best photograph. We don't pick what we actually look like.
Yep.
You know, we pick the one that catches us in the right light, maybe a few years old.
Oh, man, yeah.
And we start to kind of build the storyline up, which means we've then got to live up to it. Yeah, which is pretty kind of tough, isn't it? I wonder how many people are really just completely honest in the photograph and in their self-description.
My online persona is quite well pruned and what have you. Like, I use the same profile pic for Twitter and LinkedIn, which people may have seen. Although I just changed my Facebook one for the first time in a couple of years recently. And it's one of me and Will just having a bit of fun and me kind of looking at him, which I was quite happy with. But yeah. But then on the other side, there are people that I'm sure will know, the Facebook friends that change their profile picture every day or two. And it's just like, whoa, what's going on in their heads, you know, flip the neck.
Are they rejecting those previous images of themselves?
Yeah, on a near daily basis or once a week or whatever.
I think that in the end it does come down to that the issues of rejection are internalised. It's not what happens to us, it's how we respond to it.
Yep.
And that's pretty difficult if someone has just cleared off and taken all your money, or you've just been made redundant from a job that would have given you maybe a fabulous pension in years to come that you've now lost. There are lots of kind of issues around that.
Yep.
But ultimately, the ability to pick ourselves up and dust ourselves down and get on with life is about how we feel about us.
Yeah, I mean, rejection isn't just something that we have more of as youngsters when we find relationships. As people get older, maybe they're rejected in the workplace because they're not up to the task that their job anymore, that kind of thing. People being made redundant, that can hit people pretty hard, hey?
Yeah, yeah. And I've been in lots of situations where one of my not-so-good roles that I play is when we are downsizing an organisation.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can mean, like, halving a workforce. And there's a million issues in that, because the people that are going, because we have to do an assessment of who goes and who stays, so that the people that go feel like they're rejected.
Yeah.
The people that are staying very often feel guilty because their friends and colleagues are going. But also they now have this level of fear, which is, could it be me next? Will I be rejected as well?
Yeah.
And so it builds in layers. And trying to do that kind of work sensitively so that you ensure that the people that are going go positively or as positively as they can. And the people that stay in a sense where they're still motivated and they've still got commitment to process or whatever.
Cool.
It's quite a magical thing when it works, but it's quite difficult to get it right.
Yeah.
And many management systems fail because they don't have the insight in that process. But, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, in my work life, I deal with rejection on a fairly regular basis. As I get more experienced, I kind of know what the client will want in terms of when I'm doing a website or any kind of graphic work. But I've had to build quite a thick skin to rejection in terms of, you know, I'll send a bit of artwork through, I'll label it V1, so it's version 1, and I'll invite kind of criticism. So I'm kind of almost preparing myself for that rejection, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think that creatively, I mean, certainly when in the past in writing songs and things, the first time that you allow someone to hear that song is a bit of a heart-stopping moment, because you want them to go, woo, yeah, isn't that great? And then you have to decide whether they're going, woo, yeah, isn't that great, because that's what they think you want to hear, or whether they actually believe it. It's the same in writing a book, isn't it? The first time you give a book to another person.
Yeah.
And the more I do that kind of stuff, the less it is. I suppose it's a bit like doing this podcast, isn't it? In the beginning, the fear of how is it going to be received, how do we come over, you know, is it going to work, those kinds of things. Are people going to tell us we're stupid? And thankfully and luckily and whatever, you know, it works okay.
Yep.
And people like it.
But we do invite criticism and we invite feedback, don't we?
Sure, yeah. But how on earth do we know how we're getting on or how life is unless we have the feedback?
Yeah. You know, but I don't... Yeah, I mean, when we do get feedback and it's a bit of rejection in some way, sometimes I deal with it better depending on the angle or how it's said and that kind of thing about this show I'm talking about.
So,
yeah.
But essentially, if someone's feedback is relevant and you look at it and you think, yeah, okay, I need to deal with that differently, I need to change something, that's fair enough, it's good, isn't it? I mean, if you're walking around looking like a complete pillock, do you want people to not say anything? You know, you've touched your skirt and your knickers, you know, as you come out of the loo. You know, do you want people just not to say something? Would you rather someone say you want your knickers and your, you know, that kind of thing?
Your flies undone. Yeah. Yeah, that kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah, you know, you've got a bogey on the end of your nose. You know, like. No, I didn't mean you've got. that kind of stuff.
How do you teach people to deal with rejection? My classic case of having this 2-year-old in my life who I'm trying to teach him how to... I mean, how do I teach him to prepare for rejection, which will come?
I think that you give someone value. You give someone value. If you tell somebody how good they are at things and you reinforce it, yeah, then they build their confidence. Yeah, I don't mean smarming up to somebody. I mean giving them genuine feedback, reinforcing the positive.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you reinforce the negative, people have a negative self-image, so that when they get criticised or rejected, they feel it like a deep hurt. If someone feels good and confident, the rejection, like a bereavement, it may hit them hard, but the recovery rate is better.
Yeah,
you know, and that goes back to me when you look at the running thing, that you learn about your cardiovascular fitness by how quickly you recover. Your heart rate spikes. And then as you stop the exercise, it comes back down. And you can measure that. But we have an emotional health as well. And when our emotions spike into that negativity, how quickly does it come back down? That measures emotional health.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it does come back to how you feel about you. And that's the thing. Is if someone comes up and says to you, I love you. And if you love yourself, you think, yeah, okay, I can understand that. I go with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If someone says, I love you, and you don't like yourself, you think they're a bloody idiot. You know, what do you want to love me for? You know, what are you after? Yeah, you get these negative responses all the time.
Yeah.
And if you just feed that through to the idea of rejection, yeah, I hate you. Okay, you've got a problem. You know, yeah. I hate you. Oh, God, I've got a problem. Yeah, it's the other way around, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, how good do you feel about you? And you're saying that they are, you're presenting ideas, artistic ideas to people in your work. And then people come along and they're going to say, I don't like that.
Yep.
But are they saying, I don't like you, Ed? Or are they saying, I just don't like that bit of that artwork?
Yeah.
And it's how do you see it, isn't it? Investment in.
Indeed. Kind of one of the last points I want to mention is about how you need to put yourself in the firing line for rejection, really, don't you? If you want to have any kind of life meaning, I think. I'm talking about taking that chance on the girl that's on the dance floor rather than just sitting back and not doing anything. You've got to, even if you might, it might take, like the Angry Birds, it might take 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 rejections till you find that right idea or that right person.
Yeah.
So you've got to, is that about building like a thick skin to rejection, or is it about just kind of letting it come and just wash over you?
Building a thick skin to me implies the idea that I've detached from my emotion. The thick skin keeps it, so I lose the empathy and the feeling.
Yeah.
So maybe it isn't to do with a thick skin. Maybe it's to do with having sloped shoulders so that it flows off you. Doesn't hit you. You know, that's
water
that's,
off the duck's back and all that. Eh?
And it flows down. Because there's always going to be something. I'd like to say everybody in the world likes me. Yeah. Sadly, that isn't the case. And I know that's not the case, because if you go into some of the organisations that I work in and you say, what do you think of Sean? I would hope the majority of people say he's a good guy, but there's going to be an amount of people, and then maybe they are the managers, who say, I bloody hate him. And it's because I've had to give them the feedback that they're not doing what they are doing well and not doing it appropriately.
Yep.
And they then see me as the nasty person.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I mean?
But they'll come to love you in the end, I'm sure.
But that's them feeling rejected by me. What do you mean? Don't know. Have you ever felt really, really rejected by anything or anybody? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there's been certain bits of work I've done, you know, since I've been self-employed. But, yeah, there's key moments in my life where I've asked, I remember one in particular where I was a girl I asked out in quite a public place as well. And I'd been building up to it for weeks and weeks and finally build up the courage and then pow, smash down. Yeah, it was a no. But, hey-ho, onwards and upwards.
I in some ways, because I'm used to observing people and observing myself as well, when people are on that kind of rejecting path, I like to give it back to them. So my example of this would be, I was in an organisation, and I was part of the occupational health department in the organisation. And there's a meeting of the great and good. There's all the directors and everything there.
Yep.
And this director was having a occupational health day. And he actually decided to stand up. And he was getting quite sort of, you know, energised by it. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into let's have a pop at Sean Day. And he was being a bit on the nail. And it was quite interesting. I could see people around me getting more and more uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
So I did what I normally do in situations like that. When he took a breath, I gave him the hand, held the hand up, so he just stopped a moment. And I just said to him, are you always as rude as this? Or is it just especially for me? And at which point he kind of went bright red and choked and kind of dried up. Because one of the things is, do I take what he's saying about rejection for me and for the department that I'm representing? Or is it that it's his stuff? And actually it is his stuff, it isn't, you know.
Yeah.
And by giving it back to somebody and not taking, I don't need to take this on board, it's not my stuff, I don't need to feel this rejection, you need to keep it, mate. You know, that's yours.
Yep. So he's smashed him down in public.
Yeah, and just gave it to him back. But do you know what I mean? It's like, do I take it on board or do I not? And
yeah.
It's like, I need to take it on board if it's relevant. Mm-hmm. But if it's irrelevant, yeah, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we have to look at what it is we're feeling rejected about.
Yeah. Indeed. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Any self-help tips, Sean, or anything you'd like to say in conclusion?
Well, I think that it is a case of, if you are feeling huge levels of rejection, the thing that you need to do is to go and talk to somebody about it. And that can be a bereavement counsellor.
Yep.
Because very often if someone dies on you, you can feel rejected, which may sound odd. But the whole process of bereavement and loss can be like that. And you may even feel that idea of rejection if you've had some form of surgery. You know, maybe a woman has had a difficult abdominal operation, so she's covered in scars, or maybe she's lost a breast, and then has the problem of trying to deal with her experience of rejection, maybe by her partner. Yeah, but maybe that rejection is hers, it's not theirs.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's that bit about understanding what's going on. And sometimes you can only do that by sitting down and talking with another person, which is where psychotherapy wins out on all the other kinds of stuff. Really.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. You got a resource of the week.
Yeah, my resource for the week is a WikiHow, and the link's up. But it's simply called How to Handle Rejection. And it just takes you through a whole load of ideas. But the other thing that it looks at a bit, and it's something that everyone that's listening to this needs to consider, is that very often the things that we say to other people are rejecting.
Yeah.
And being able to reject people positively, you know, to say, no, I don't want to do this, or, you know, I don't want you to do this, that kind of stuff. But to do it without damaging them, mm-hmm, is a magical thing. But it involves thinking about it before we speak.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's some stuff in there, which is quite
nice. Well, I can see how that article is relevant to this week's episode. Yeah,
it is indeed.
Yeah.
What's yours then?
Is mine relevant? I don't know. It's a TED talk, mine. And yeah, is it? I don't think it's hugely relevant, but I want to put it in because it was sent to me by a listener, Colette. Thanks, Colette. It's a TED talk about nature, beauty, and gratitude by Louis Schwartzberg, a guy from West Coast America, I think, or that's where he lives anyway. Beautiful little talk. I think it's only a 10-minute video about, yeah, just appreciating the beauty of nature. And it's got a short film at the end of it that he's made. He's a photographer. So he's been staring through a lens his whole life at just flowers slowly opening and doing time-lapse photography.
Yeah.
And I thank Colette for sending it through, and I will send it on to all you guys. If you go to the website, you'll see the link to it, because it's a cool, really cool little video. And I'm trying to get in the habit at the moment of getting a TED Talk a day in my system, because I've saved a load to my favourites, because you can do that if you log into TED.com. You can like put them in your to watch folder.
Yeah.
So I got through a load yesterday, and I'm trying to watch one a day and just learn a little bit each day about something new.
I think that the whole TED Talk organisation is amazing, and if you don't know it, you need to go and check it out, because it is such an amazing resource to hook into.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's incredible. And it's quite an interesting story as well about how it's developed, because initially it was quite a closed community where it was invitation only, and it still is if you want to go to the main TED Talks. It's invite only, but obviously they opened the talks up online. But initially they never didn't video them, or that you weren't allowed to watch it. But it's just exploded now, and it's quite a big brand, a wonderful bit of work.
Yep.
All right, next week, Sean, giving and receiving we're talking about, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I shall give you lots to think about.
Of course.
As long as you receive it.
Oh, I'm always open to new things, Sean. You know me. In the meantime, everyone, visit livingthepresent.co.uk for all the show notes and links to things we've just discussed. Lots of cool freebies as well, and some not freebies too. There's books, there's all sorts of resources in there that you can have a look at. Share the show with a friend if you could, just to help spread the word. If you could leave a review on iTunes, that'd be lovely too. We love reading those, and we'll read them out in next week's show as well. Give you a little digital high five. And in the meantime, Sean, you have a good week.
Yeah, and you, Ed. Take care.
Everyone out there too. Yeah. Take care.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
See ya.